TFM.
This is J.G. Hertz, the General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, before we get going today, there's just something I have to do, otherwise we can't move on. Just hold on.
Okay.
Computer, commence station log. We got to get going with that, Matthew, because we are starting with the beginning of the series this time with Emissary, and maybe you can share why we're doing that.
Well, as many people know, and I think probably most people, if not all people know that are listening to this podcast, it's 30 years since Star Trek Deep Space Nine premiered. In fact, we just passed the date when that happened. And so we're really excited that we are going to be doing the same thing that we've been doing with Enterprise when it hit its 20th. We're going to be walking through an anniversary podcast, basically, and talking about every single episode of the series. And I think, you know, it's a great way, Chris, you and I over the years have talked about so many things with Deep Space Nine, but I think this is kind of, you know, like Enterprise as well. This is going to kind of put the final touch on these podcasts, these series podcasts, by giving us the opportunity to do this and really kind of give our definitive statements on these shows. You know, after so many years, you know, the fact that we're at 30 years with Deep Space Nine, I don't know what more we could probably say other than what we're about to say about every single episode of the series. But I don't want people to think, oh, this is just going to be boring. They've all said it before. There's so much that can be said. I think one of the things that we do here at TFM is really talk through all of the really nitty-gritty, the thematic elements, all of that type of stuff. And I can't wait to be able to systematically go through Deep Space Nine like this with you, because even just rewatching Emissary for this was such a joy, because there's just so much there to mine. And I think what I'm most amazed by is just how much that's going to be there at the end is there in the beginning. That's really, impressive.
Right. And I don't necessarily think they had that all planned out, of course, but it shows the skill of the writing team that they were able to go back and connect all those dots in the way that they did. So, yeah, it's going to be fun to do a 30th anniversary rewatch together, because, as you said, we've talked about so many aspects of Deep Space Nine, but we've done relatively few episodes where we actually just focus on the episode and the story in the way that we will with a rewatch, because this show, like all of our series-focused shows on the network, was conceived as a platform for talking about the minutiae of Star Trek, and that's why we have very specific focused topics that aren't necessarily about a single episode. And now for this run, we're going to get away from that, and we're going to go through this format of talking about each and every story. And even the stories that we have talked about before, a big difference is that we're older now. The way we look at those stories may have changed since the last time we discussed them. So there's always something new there. And to that point, Matthew, we're recording this on January 11th of 2023, which is exactly 10 years since we published the first episode of this podcast, The Orb, which was on January 11th.
Wow, that's amazing.
2013, when we published the episode, which we titled If Wishes Were Horses, but it was our first impressions of DS9. And now we're going to revisit our first impressions of DS9 just a little bit in talking about Emissary, only we're 10 years older ourselves. So we're celebrating 30 years of Deep Space Nine. And over on Warp 5, we're celebrating 20 years of Enterprise. And here on the Orb, we're celebrating 10 years of the Orb. So how's that? Very neat by decades.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's just so cool that that's the where we are, you know. And I think I was thinking back, you know, for me, I didn't really watch TNG consistently when it was on the air. And by the time that it ended, my Star Trek fandom had like just blew up. And my sister and I became huge fans of Deep Space Nine. And I remember it was back in the day too when, you know, they'd be doing the reruns already. Mm-hmm. We were taping them so we could catch up with the series where it was. And, you know, for us, it was just a big deal because we wanted to be able to see all of them. So Deep Space Nine was actually the very first Star Trek show that I was basically watching as it was coming out consistently. And then, that, of course, that went into Voyager and then Enterprise and, you know, things continued from there. And so this, you know, for me, it's probably not the same thing for everyone. You know, I knew TNG and everything and, you know, I knew the characters and I'd seen some of the episodes and everything. But, you know, Deep Space Nine was really my portal into Star Trek like this, where it's that you're at the age where you can kind of choose what mm-hmm. you want to watch.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then you get to watch it every week as it's happening. And I just, you know, I remember then by the time it was over, just being devastated that it was ending, mm-hmm. you know. And so, yeah, that I think it's one of the reasons Deep Space Nine has such a piece of me, because there's so much about it that really sets it apart from every other Star Trek show at yeah. that point.
That's really interesting. I think you're a somewhat rare breed to have entered the franchise in full force like that anyway with Deep Space Nine, because there was
right.
such a brief time when DS9 was the only show. And yes. of course, TNG had everyone's attention and was being nominated for Best Drama and Emmys. And then Voyager came along and got all the promotion because it was launching a network. And DS9 was just kind of floating in there, giving us the great stories while everyone was excited about TNG on the big screen, Voyager launching UPN. And so I think there are probably a lot more people who entered the franchise through Voyager mm-hmm. a few yep. years later rather than through DS9. So that's quite interesting.
Well, and the strangest thing about it too for me was just that I had the original series. You know, I'd seen mm-hmm. a lot of the original series. I'd seen all the original series movies at that point as well. And so there was just this, you know, kind of hopping from that then to getting, you know, really entrenched in Deep Space Nine was very interesting, and kind of missing the, you know, the big chunk of TNG that most people had been marinating in. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's one of the reasons that I was so taken with Deep Space Nine, I think, and we've talked a lot about this before, but I think this series, from the start, we start with connections. And, you know, thinking of and rewatching Emissary here, I was just struck immediately that we're making connections with TNG. And what's going to be a calling card of this show is going to be taking what TNG did and then expounding upon it and giving it actual depth. Mm-hmm. The way in which this show throws us into the battle with the Borg from the best mm-hmm. of both worlds and seeing it from a completely different perspective, and then forcing Picard to face his actions as Locutus and how it's impacted people outside of the Enterprise in a completely unexpected way. I think, you know, those connections become the calling card for Deep Space Nine. And not only just connecting, you know, obviously with TNG, but to reference what I was talking about just a minute ago, it's going to connect a lot with a lot of stuff we heard or thought about or have connected to the original series. So to me, that as I was rewatching this, that's the first thing that just really hit me in the face was just this show is immediately telling you it's going to be different. And part of that is that it's connecting full force with what's come before.
Yeah. Yeah, it tells you that it's going to be different, but I think they did a really nice job of using the first half of the episode to pull you in with things that are familiar, and then halfway through, like, it's like cutting the cord and saying, okay, now you're on your own. They spent time on The Next Generation setting up the premise of DS9 with Rolaren and Bajor. And so Picard had developed this connection to Bajor. And of course, it's well known these days that originally they wanted Ro to be in the role that Kira is in now. So they were trying to set that up. And with the arrival of O'Brien and then the Enterprise coming in, the interactions with Sisko and Picard, that really helped people coming from TNG to ease into the DS9 premise. Of course, they did a wonderful job, as we've discussed, I think, a number of times, of creating conflict, however, between Sisko and Picard. So then you knew, well, this is going to be a bit different than what we've been watching. But what really strikes me is that after O'Brien goes back to the Enterprise, and then Picard comes in and beams him back over to the station, and then you see the Enterprise leave the pylon and go off on its own. When you fade back in, you've got Kira, you've got Ops, the view screen, you've got Dukat calling, and then the music swells at that point as well. And that's the moment where it's like cutting that cord and saying, okay, we've shown you what you know, we've gotten you here on the station, and now we're going to cast you out on your own with this new show and this new premise, and you're here in the wilderness, as Bashir would say, and we're going to go from there. And I thought, you know, creatively, that was a really nice way to split the two-hour pilot and ease you in and then send you on your way.
Yeah, another way to think about it, too, is, you know, with those connections, you might be cutting the cord, but you're also then finally dealing with all the consequences of the actions that the Enterprise and the Federation have been taking over all the seasons of TNG, right? Like, now we're living in the consequence universe. And I think that's the show does such a masterful job here at the beginning of setting that up. And I think, like you said, one of the ways they do that is with those familiar settings, a few familiar characters, and even the familiarity of, you know, you had the Bajorans that you'd seen on TNG and all of that type of stuff. But then they're taking that and they're really, it's like, now we're just going to marinate in it. And, you know, that's something that which Star Trek had never done before, which is to really dig into the depths of stories because you're not leaving at the end of the episode.
Right.
And so that I was just really struck by the idea that this show really becomes about consequences for actions. And we continually show the repercussions of these consequences over and over and over again. And then that's one of the ways in which the story of Deep Space Nine then builds, because they set out all of these, you know, different, we've talked about before, like threads, right? And then they pull on those threads, but really those threads are just consequences of previous actions. And so to me, that's something that's just really, it's it's what makes for good serialized storytelling, mm-hmm. is when you begin to just deal with the consequences of the actions that characters have taken. And when you're more focused on the characters than you are necessarily on just telling kind of like the plot of the week. I think, you know, that's something that's, again, that we're setting Deep Space Nine apart from the beginning, which I think is another thing that we do, which is, you know, this show's really in your face mm-hmm. from the beginning, tone wise.
Right.
And I think it immediately sets itself to say, this is not TNG. Right. You know, this is the world that everyone lives in on the frontier. This is what the frontier is like. It's not clean. It's not easy. It's dirty. It, you know, it's about getting your hands dirty, as Kira says. And I think this is the most quote unquote, like a Western of all the shows, because this is the frontier town.
Right. Right.
And so,
which takes you back to the original concept of Star Trek, right? That it was a Western. You mentioned that we're not leaving at the end. And I said a moment ago that the point at which they cut the cord is when you see the Enterprise leave the pylon and fly away. And so I was just thinking that you could tell this story from the other perspective and have it be a TNG episode. You could have the Enterprise crew setting out on their mission to go to DS9 to deliver some things, to brief Sisko. And you could have the whole story be from that point of view. And then they leave at the end and it would be just like a TNG episode, right? But we're seeing the flip side of it, where they're arriving. It's almost like if you took every TNG episode and after the Enterprise comes and goes, you tell the story of what happened on that planet or on that base or wherever it is, and you stretch that out. So it's really like flipping the whole storytelling concept on its head.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. And I think that's where that in-your-face nature of the show kind of comes from. Mm-hmm. That's where that idea of we're getting our hands dirty comes from, right? Because when you're on the frontier, when you're in the town, like, yeah, you don't go anywhere. So what happens is the building of that town. It's the mm-hmm. interpersonal relationships then that happen. It's about the law and order establishment. It's about, you know, dealing with the enemies that are encroaching on the town. Like all of those type of things is what this show is going to deal with. And this episode really sets all of those pieces on the board. You know, you've got this strife on Bajor. Now that the Cardassians are gone, they're struggling with who are they going to be. You get the Cardassians on the doorstep, and then you have the introduction of something that puts this place on the map, right? In a way that nobody expected, which is the wormhole. So it's just, there's all of these things that are just kind of big and mm-hmm. bold and brash. And I mean, like, yeah, I was also struck by the way in which those connections, and starting with the Battle of Wolf 359, it's in your face in the sense that tone, it's darker. It is deeper. And we're dealing then with the repercussions of that show hurt and pain and suffering in the same mm-hmm. way that we're dealing with, the same way the Bajorans are dealing with the hurt, the pain, the suffering that they've been through. And so that's a stark contrast to what TNG was, which again was very clean. Like the standout episodes of TNG tend to be the ones where we're actually dealing with raw emotions of characters.
Yeah.
Like you think of family, or mm-hmm. you might think of, I think a Chain of Command, mm-hmm. where we're really putting characters through the ringer and it brings out this raw emotion that we don't normally see.
Right.
Well, that's almost every single episode of this series, you know? And really, I think, starts that trend.
Well, and also the fact that the Federation isn't welcome. Starfleet isn't welcome. They're here. It's a case where, you know, the Bajorans are friends. They're allies. They're not enemies who want to push the Federation away, but they also really don't want someone coming in and dominating their culture again. They appreciate the help, but a lot of them feel like we can figure it out on our own, which is, again, in contrast to TNG, where the Enterprise usually comes in. The people are so grateful that the Federation has helped them, that Starfleet has helped them. And here we see that that's not really the case. And, you know, talking about in-depth characters, you know, right off the bat, we get Kira, who I know we say this a lot, and I don't mean it to be critical of some other shows, but I feel like we learn more about Kira in this episode than we know about a lot of the characters in other Star Trek series. And TNG is a series, too, because of the type of storytelling where we didn't get to know the characters in a lot of detail until we got through six or seven seasons. And even then, we still didn't know a whole lot about the characters, certainly not in the way that we knew the characters on DS9 by the time we get to the end. Even Quark, you know, I mean, Quark just comes to life in this first episode. Odo, even Nog getting into trouble, and just like you said, there's so much focus on the characters rather than the plot here of just the pure storyline that for me, it pulled me into the storytelling. I think for some people, maybe, I think most people probably consider Emissary to be a pretty strong story, but some of the other episodes of season one maybe felt a little bit slow or dry or fell flat for them, which we'll find out for ourselves how we feel as we move along. But here, you know, as it's set up, I think that they really put the pieces into place for this character-driven show.
No, I like what you're saying, because when you do look at every single character on this show that's going to be a major player as we move forward, we do learn quite a bit about them very quickly. And in many ways, more than we learn about a lot of characters on a lot of Star Trek shows previously. And one of the ways that, I think one of the best case in points in that is that Commander Sisko, we learn about a majority of his life in this series. Like this episode sets up who he is so much and so many big parts of his life. But this is also a person that has wounds, you know, that has deep emotional scarring, which reflects much more of somebody like Kirk, especially in the films, right? Where Kirk becomes this character who has this deep emotional resonance to him. And that's what we're given in Sisko, you know, with the loss of his wife, the struggling to be a father now that she's gone. And of course, you know, we've talked about before, but I mean, I was struck again by how the message of Sisko's life of being kind of stuck in a moment that he can't get out of. Thank you, you too, for giving us that song. but how relevant that is to what we are in today, and how it's mirrored then by what Kira and all of Bajor are going through, which is they've been stuck in a place struggling with a lifetime of war. And how do you find a way to let go of the past? Not to let go of it because you're not learning the lessons from it, but to forge a new future. How do you do that? How do you move past such massive, overwhelming, painful experiences? And to me, you know, it's an incredibly poignant lesson, because I feel like more than ever, our world wants to wallow in past mistakes or hurts or pains and never let it go. And as the prophets say, but you live here.
Right.
Yeah. And so but that's the type of depth we get in one episode. And that you know, it's incredibly poignant and it's incredibly powerful, and it continues to be so every time I watch this episode, because I think it's a message that we constantly need to be reminded of, that we have to find a way to learn the lessons of the past and then use them to forge a better future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the strongest moments and messages. It's not just a moment, because we revisit the prophets talking to Sisko in this episode more than once. But yeah, that idea of, yeah, you exist in one moment in time that you can't let go of. And it really defines, it can define who you are if you're not able to put it in perspective and move beyond it, you know, learn from it. And I think also that lyric, stuck in a moment that you can't get out of, maybe describes us with DS9 too, Matthew. We've been stuck in a moment since January 3rd, 1993. And apparently we can't get out of it, because we're still talking about DS9 all these years later. But it's things like that that for Emissary set it apart for me from other pilots, where I think moving... Well, okay, so TNG, I think, Encounter at Farpoint did a great job of setting up a new Star Trek series in a reboot that a lot of people were very skeptical about, but it didn't give us a bunch of character depth. It did give us the idea of humanity cannot move beyond its past in the sense of putting humanity on trial, but Caretaker did, I think, a great job of setting up the premise of Voyager. And Broken Bow did a wonderful job of setting up the premise of Enterprise, and I think is of those pilots from that era of Star Trek, probably the most beautifully produced one. But Emissary is the one that gave us not only the setup for a series, but the setup for a deep story with many layers that are all contained within that first episode. And so that's what really sets it apart for me. And the idea, really, that like you're brought in with this feeling that, okay, here's the Starfleet commander in Sisko. He's sent to the station. He doesn't really want to be here, but he's here to do a job. But you have those mysterious moments where, like, the Bajoran, I don't know, priest or Vedic, whatever he is on the station, who just tells Sisko it's time. And Sisko says, not at the moment, but eventually he goes and meets the Kai. It's those just mysterious moments that make you realize, like, there's something else going on here. There's something different about the fact that Sisko is here. And then when he has the discussion with Kai Opaka, when he looks into the orb and she reveals to him, you know, the person who doesn't want to be here is to be the emissary. And that really sets your mind into motion. What does that mean to be the emissary? The emissary of what? And that's another, for Star Trek, an unexpected layer that's inserted into the setup of what will become a story that will span all the way to the end of the series.
Yeah, I mean, this show is telling us from the first episode that this is about the human adventure. It's about the adventure of figuring out who we are as human beings. And sometimes that's the greatest adventure, right? Is to truly find out who it is that we are and our place in the universe. And I think one of the ways in which you are nailing that it's doing that then is that Deep Space Nine sets itself apart in the very first episode by, we're going to take that journey by showing that life has a spiritual side. That life is not just made up of what we can quantify on a tricorder, but it is going to be made up of the soul, the spirit. We're gonna explore all of that, and not only that, but that we're gonna show that there are people of faith out there in the galaxy, and that's not something that's automatically at odds or opposed to quote-unquote science, right?
Mm-hmm.
So to explore the in-depth nature of our characters, we're going to explore a side of ourselves that Star Trek has never explored before, which is the spiritual side of life. And that's, I think, what really opens the door for this show to be so important, so special, so powerful, rewatch after rewatch, because it isn't just about the technobabble of the week, but it truly is about exploring the human condition. And we as human beings are not just matter, but we know intrinsically we are also something else. And that's one of the great questions, right, of all of existence. And that's where this show, I think, it sets itself apart in every single way by allowing us to do that in a way that I think is so wonderfully even-handed and carefully done, but also challenging in every single way. And so that's something that this is truly special for Star Trek, especially at this time. And I think even moving forward, it's not something that's ever really been addressed in quite this way in Star Trek again.
Mm. Well, I think it's one reason that Deep Space Nine, of all the Star Trek series from the original series on through the end of Enterprise, is proving itself to be the series that is standing the test of time the best of them all, in my opinion, because these themes like that that are at the heart of the series and that are set up here in Emissary are things that we need to be reminded of over and over and over, because we keep falling as a species. We keep falling back into the same cycles over and over again. And so when we watch these stories, we keep seeing ourselves in them, whether it's in the 90s, whether it's in the noughts or the teens, or now we're into the 20s. It's like a never ending cycle. And unfortunately, it probably will continue to be. But these are really timeless tales that we're setting up here.
Well, and I think, you know, I've mentioned before, I think possibly on the Orb, but you know, it reminds me of in Interstellar, you know, when he talks about the idea, you know, we used to look up at the stars and wonder, and now all we do is dig in the dirt. And I think the reason that it stands the test of time is that navel gazing gets you nowhere. Mm-hmm. Right. And in many ways, I think that's kind of the message of this episode, which is Sisko has been so consumed with this like inner struggle of kind of looking backwards and internally that he's missing it. Like, you know, what he tells Jake later on in the series, you know, Jake, it's life. You know, if you don't look up once in a while, you'll miss it. And I think by exploring a spiritual side, we are reminding ourselves to look up, right? Mm-hmm. That things are bigger than just what's happening right here on the ground, or it keeps us, I think, from being so mired in the dirt, and it helps us find awe and wonder again, which that's one of the coolest parts of this episode, right? We explore something in Star Trek that may be the most truly alien thing we've ever explored in Star Trek up to this point, which are the prophets. It's an incredible introduction to Star Trek when it comes to, you know, quote unquote Star Trek aliens, something that feels so alien, so new, and so different. And that's an incredible introduction to this show as well. And I think, you know, it's not the forehead of the week. It's this very metaphysical alien species. And that also creates something new and interesting and completely different for us to be able to explore on Deep Space Nine that other shows just hadn't done.
Yeah. Yeah. Something that's so different, but we can also interact with them so that we can explore the human condition through those interactions. Mm-hmm. When we've had something like truly alien in the past, we've had on TNG, we had the crystalline entity. I mean, it's a living thing, but we couldn't interact with it. We could not explore philosophical concepts with it. In the original series, we had the Horda. Again,
right.
We could talk about how we treat others and how we treat others who we don't understand, but we couldn't really explore
right
beyond that. But here with the prophets, you know, we actually can have dialogue where also the aliens themselves are puzzled by us, but also I think genuinely interested in the fact that we are very different than they are, as long as we're not harming them. You know, they say every time you go through this wormhole, you're damaging our own world. But then when we get to the point where Sisko is of the prophets, which I don't think was necessarily the way it plays out anyway, the intention here in Emissary. But, you know, once we get to that, and they did a brilliant job. I know we generally don't jump ahead when we do these rewatches, but I will just say they did a brilliant job of revisiting the scenes in the White Void, the prophets and such that we get in Emissary when we get to the end of the series. You know, they leverage that really well and build on what they do here with Sisko and Emissary, and that was wonderful.
Yeah, no, I think the introduction of a race of beings that truly lives outside of space and time and has no concept of what that is fascinating. And then the setup here of Sisko as their emissary to these people, the prophets, and how all that works, and the interesting aspect then of, and truly like alien idea of how they see time, and then how that therefore works itself out into the rest of the show is, you know, it's so beautifully done, and it creates this really interesting exploration of a godlike nature that is so much more interesting than just the Q, you know, where Q is just this, like, you know, petty, petulant, almost Greek godlike character. Whereas the prophets are a much more fascinating discussion of godlikeness. And
they don't see themselves as gods, though. That's like a difference between them and the Q continuum. Yeah.
Right. Well, exactly. But I mean, to create the idea of like a being, a race of beings that lives outside of space and time, which is a very like Christian type idea of God. And to add that into an alien and then like, discuss all that. I mean, it's so much more interesting than basically just playing around with like omnipotent beings with, you know, ridiculous powers, but just that really Q is just basically a Zeus updated for Star Trek. And whereas this is just I think a much more clever, and it gives you so much more to play with in a way that leads to, again, I think truly deep stories then as well, because we're plumbing the depths of reality itself and in a way that Star Trek hadn't done before, which is truly alien, you know, because it really expands our understanding and our thought process of what it means to understand time and space.
Yeah, exactly. Well, one other thing that we did want to talk about a little bit that's set up here is the conflict, because that's another thing that sets the show apart. Gene Roddenberry always had this idea, or at least this is for the most part, the idea that there wouldn't be conflict among the Starfleet crew because humanity is supposed to be able to work together now. And in TNG, yeah, you pretty much see that all the time. You don't see much conflict between crew members. And I think maybe one of the closest we get would be Riker not being happy about Deanna dating Worf. And even then, you know, he's trying his best to hold that in, you know, because we don't want any conflict between the crew members. But here, because we have a mixed crew, some Starfleet officers, some Bajorans, some, I mean, Odo's part of the Bajoran crew, I guess, but he's from the outside, right? And then you've got Quark, who's not. You just got this kind of menagerie of personalities and alliances or allegiances and such. And so it's natural that you're going to have some conflict internally, which makes for better drama. But then you've also got the looming conflict of the Cardassians who have left Bajor, but as soon as the Enterprise leaves, they show up. Dukat's there. And what I love about it too is it's not just the Cardassians show up, but Kira says, ah, Dukat, he used to be the prefect during the occupation. We're getting not generic Cardassians who have come back, but we're getting a very specific character right off the bat. We're being told something meaningful about him, and we meet him and we get to know him through his interactions right off the bat in the pilot. And, you know, it is interesting that he wasn't necessarily intended to be a recurring character in the way that he did. And in the documentary, Mark Alamo talks about his frustration of thinking that they weren't happy enough with what he was doing. And they tell him, well, we kept bringing you back. That's how you know that writers appreciate you. But I mean, they set the character up for success in this episode with the way they wrote the character and then the way that Mark played the character. And I think these, again, I keep talking about layers in this story, but here's another one. You know, we have layers of conflict that are being set up,
right,
which is also quite different than what we had seen in Star Trek before.
Well, and I mean, to put it in perspective too, the way they're building this conflict, and especially like you mentioned with Dukat coming back. I mean, Dukat coming back into this world that he's left, you know, he was the prefect of the station. This is like a concentration camp captain coming back to the place in which he used to be the ruler and now isn't. And is just
and not
walking
much
around.
Time has passed either.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Or, you know, I mean, so that's the type of thing that this show is dealing with. And that's the type of conflict that we are adding. But I think, you know, something we kind of started at the very beginning with was that we're dealing with the fallout of Wolf 359 for a very personal character to us now in Commander Sisko. And that personal conflict that he has with Captain Picard is such an interesting thing, because that's not something that we would have ever seen on TNG, and that they take that step to help us have that conflict that by the end we do resolve that, right? But it was a process that had to be gone through. And this again is, I think, the conflict by creating this as the frontier town allows that to be the case, because they're, like you were saying, there's so many different interesting parties involved here that are all on different sides of different issues, and that allows us to be able to deal with that. And I think what's great about this show is that they also allow that conflict to seep in a little bit with our Starfleet characters, where they don't always see eye to eye. And that creates a more interesting milieu to be able to be in then as well. And so, rewatching this, just very much struck by how intentional the tone is being set for that we do want to try something different with Deep Space Nine, because we can't, and I think the writers understood, we can't just do another show like TNG.
Right.
That doesn't even make sense. And so they create this interesting structure that is going to allow them to do that. And even in this first episode, we've already differentiated ourselves by miles from... And not Miles O'Brien, but from where we've been in the past.
Yeah. Well, I've differentiated myself from Miles O'Brien in the fact that I don't have a lot of hair on the top of my head, and he's got those curly locks. So I will say, just to that point about the conflict between Sisko and Picard, you know, I remember well as someone who had been watching TNG every week and can't wait for the next episode to come out, all the way up, and followed the development, you know, the news about DS9 coming out, being developed, and then sitting down. I was in, I think, third year of university when DS9 premiered January 3rd, 1993. And I remember sitting down with my roommate, and we couldn't wait for it to come on. And then we're watching it, and to see Sisko speak to Picard in the way that he speaks to him was jarring. That's like, you know, at that point, Picard was, he's the captain of the flagship. As fans, we're watching him every week. He's always so cool and in control and revered by those who serve under him, and is seen as this great voice of the Federation on all the worlds that he visits. And here you've got a commander who's speaking to him that way. And because of the fact that there previously had not been this conflict among Starfleet officers, you can understand why Sisko feels this way and blames Picard for the death of his wife. But you don't expect him as a commander to speak that way to a captain and not to Captain Picard. And so that was really a jarring thing in this episode. And I remember watching it when it first aired and thinking, wow, you know, they really are doing something different here. They are setting us on a new path.
Well, and it's interesting because, again, this mirrors Kirk, you know, in the sense that Kirk, if Sisko were to give the speech, he's like, I've never trusted Captain Picard and I never will. I've never right. been able to forgive him for the death of my wife. And that's what's happening here. And I think, you know, one of the things that this show does is that it connects us back to that idea that people can hurt people still, even unintentionally, maybe, or in situations that are out of their control. But that still doesn't mean that the emotional pain that's caused isn't real. And right. I think that's something that Deep Space Nine remembered, is that emotional and, you know, spiritual and physical and mental anguish is something that is can't just be brushed away with the wave of a hand. And that's, I think, to the benefit of the show, and for then us as viewers of Deep Space Nine.
Absolutely. Well, I don't know if we have final thoughts because we've covered so many points here, but if so, what are your final thoughts and what's your rating? Because we are doing ratings in our rewatches. So what's your rating for Emissary?
This is an incredible beginning to a series, and I am always struck by how much I enjoy the rewatch of this episode every time I rewatch it. It's astounding to me, actually, that that's the case, that I really do enjoy this episode still this much. And I think what it has to say still resonates even today. And so for me, this, I think, is the best pilot of Star Trek, and with Broken Bow just right under that. And I would give this 5 out of 5. There's your wormhole!
Excellent. Yeah, my final thoughts on it are just that, as I said in the discussion, I think it's the strongest pilot episode of any Star Trek series because of the strength of the story. Some of them have been flashier. Some of them have been maybe more polished from a production standpoint because the crews learn along the way and they improve their techniques with Caretaker and Broken Bow. And then, of course, with the newer series, the technology is just completely different. So, you know, you can make stuff that looks more polished. But from a storytelling point of view, it just doesn't get any better than this for me with a pilot episode. And I'm going to give it all the Bajoran orbs.
Nice. Nice. Can I just say, too, and it's going to continue to get said, put this in HD, you cowards.
Yes,
put it in
come
HD.
Come on already. Yeah.
Come on. Just make it happen.
At this point, really. I mean, the money that these streaming networks are throwing at content, hit and miss new content, I mean, just put the money into remastering the things that you have that are your masterpieces. You know, remaster DS9, remaster Voyager. Give us all of Star Trek in HD already. Well, everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on Emissary. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. If you're already a member, you know what to do. But if not, please answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. It is a closed group just for listeners. We want to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts here. And to find it, just go to Facebook and type Babel, B-A-B-E-L. It should come right up. If not, just type the whole name, the Babel Conference. You can also contact us online. If you go to our website, trek.fm/contact, use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that'll come to Matthew and me by email. It actually comes through the wormhole in this case, encased in an orb, and then Dax appears and hands it to us. So it's a really cool way to send us a message in a bottle, in a sense. And you can also find us in social media on Twitter, Mastodon now, Instagram, everywhere. Our username is TrekFM. And if the podcast app that you use allows you to do so, we'd love to get a rating and a review from you for the orb as well. Well, Matthew, when you're not screaming, "There's your wormhole," alongside Kira, as you look at the view screen, where can people find you?
Well, of course, you can find me all over the place on social media under the name MattRushing02. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Letterboxd, Vero, under that same name. You can also, of course, find me here on the TFM Network doing the 602 Club, which is our whole other side of the network, not devoted to Star Trek, but all of the other fandoms we love. We've got some great bonus shows in there as well, so I hope you'll check that out. And, you know, we are dedicated as well here on TFM to giving back to you on Patreon, so we're doing exclusive episodes just for Patreon members over there, too. So, support us on Patreon, and you can get content that nobody else can get other than you and our first VIP room episode. You can also find me doing Literary Treks about the books and the comics of Star Trek. Chris, we already talked about, we're doing Warp 5 together as we're our 20th anniversary rewatch. We're continuing with that. We've got Saddle Up about Strange New Worlds, and I'm so excited that Season 3 of Star Trek Picard is going to be coming out, where we're talking about that on the Artificial Tango, you and I, Chris. And then over on the Nerd Party Network, you'll find me with a completed show Owl Post. Drea Kaufman and I talked about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. And the great John Mills and I are talking about Star Wars each and every week on Aggressive Negotiations. But Chris, when you're not, you know, heading over to Quark's and trying the local synth ale, where can people find you?
Yeah, you know, the Bajorans, they're such a spiritual people, but they make a dreadful ale. So I think I am going to stick with that synth ale. And when I'm done drinking that, you can find me doing the shows you mentioned here with you. I am really looking forward to later this year. We're going to get to do the Artificial Tango again with Picard Season 3 coming up. And I guess at some point we'll get to Saddle Up again as well. I think we're going to get some Strange New Worlds
at some point. I'm ready for that as well.
Yeah, and then of course you can find me in back episodes all over the catalog here. And you can also chat with me in social media. I'd love to hear from you, talk about Star Trek or whatever you'd like to chat about. My username on Twitter and everywhere is C Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to our next orb that we open up, because we're going to be talking about past prologue and a visit from a couple of other familiar faces.
Chris, I can't wait to get to the next episode and continue our rewatch, but thank you everyone for joining us, and we will see you next time as we gaze into the orb.